Good morrow, and welcome back to the realm. I am epic fantasy author JV Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those of you marking your first adventure into my realm, this is my vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis. And each of those specialize in a plethora of art forms. And tonight, I've got two guests, not just one. We'll introduce those in a second. And as always, if you like what you're hearing, you could find me in my epic and fantasy, dark fantasy books at jvhilliard.com. Or feel free to follow me at JV Hilliard Books on X, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or look for me just as JV Hilliard on Facebook and Discord. And so as we reach our witching hour this evening, I want to thank our longtime sponsor, Altered Reality Magazine. Check out www.alteredrealitymag.com for your latest in speculative fiction and speculative poetry. It is a free site. You're going to find published award-winning authors all the way down to those who have first been published on the site. And they write things like sci-fi and fantasy and horror and dystopian and monster stories and things all of you like to read and listen to. Go check them out at alteredrealitymag.com. And again, we appreciate their support. And today we're going to be chronicling the adventures of two very cool guests. Let me introduce you to Spike Olakia and Tyrone Long. And Spike, I hope I got your last name right. Well, great, great. Well, let's start with you then, Spike. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you're an artist and illustrator, and we'll get into Tyrone here in a second. So tell everybody a little bit about what you do and who you are.
Yeah, so I'm an independent freelance illustrator. I specialize predominantly in comic books and otherwise do apparel and commissions. Been doing that for about 15 years now.
How about you, Tyrone?
Yeah, I'm a writer in the broadest sense of that term. I write novels, short stories, screenplays and such. And then obviously had this lifelong passion for comics. And so really that's the focus right now.
Well, you guys are quite the creative team, right? So like I one of the first questions I'm going to get asked, so I have to ask it before my listeners ask it. How did you guys meet? And how long have you known one another? How did this thing kind of spring up?
I guess I'll take this one since I was the lucky one that found them. Actually read it. They had a forum for individuals trying to connect with other. It was Comic Book Collabs, I believe. It's been now over 7 years since I went. Well, I went trying to find a true partner. I know traditionally a creator will kind of parse out the little aspects of the comic, like you do this, you do that. But I really wanted to embark on a quest with someone. And I happened to find Spike, whose work was beyond anything I could have imagined. And luckily enough, he turned out to be more than I had hoped for. And we just have now worked together. We meet every Thursday, and despite quite a distance between our homes. And it's I don't know, he's actually more of a brother now, to be honest with you.
Spike, is this true or is he feeding us a line? I mean, it sounds to me like you guys have a, you know, fresh love for one another. Does he speak the truth?
Yeah. No, I feel very fortunate that, I really lucked out. You know, the time when he first reached out to me, I'd actually been committed to another project and unfortunately had to turn it down. And a few months later, Tyrone reached back out to me. And at that point I actually was freed up. So yeah, we ended up meeting via Skype, and he gave me the full pitch on borrowed time, and the rest was history.
Well, let's start with that then. Let's dive in just a little bit. Spike, I'll start with you. You know, as you guys team on a project, and I'm teaming with another author right now on a writing gig, what do you, on your side of the aisle, feel that's most rewarding about bringing some of these characters to full life in the stories? And then Tyrone, you're going to get to answer that same question after Spike is done.
I mean, personally, I feel like Tyrone's characters have been among the most compelling that I've had the pleasure to work with. I feel like there's a real depth and pathos to them that I've always strived to convey in my own work. So whenever I'm immersed in this world, it forces me to pull from somewhere pretty deep in myself when I attempt to match the drawn character expressions to the emotion of the moment that he's written and their dialogue. So it's exciting to see them then come into their own, and they'll take on certain little idiosyncrasies that, you know, you don't necessarily plan for when you're going in. Like the Chris in the first issue, for example, ended up developing like this little lip thing that becomes like one of her expression traits.
You know, that's a really good answer, man. It was almost like you said, I mean, in all honesty, that was really well said. I don't know if you can beat that, Tyrone, but, you know, what do you think?
Well, actually, it's kind of funny that he mentioned a moment because whenever I think about what I find rewarding has to do with moments. I find my writing style is to start with real characters. I'm always fascinated with the dance between like darkness and light. So I try to remember that none of us is all like one thing. And so what I do is I come up with those and then I place them in moments and in a world that I'm hoping people find fascinating, find out a little bit about themselves, find out about these characters, get surprised. And it does come down to the moments. And so the most rewarding process so far with this has just been those moments coming to life. Oftentimes Spike will, like, for instance, the thing he just mentioned with Chris is he'll find a part of a character that he can bring to life in a way that my words weren't even able to at the time. So that's been very rewarding.
You know, that's funny you mention that because you're right on point. I find that in my writing, it's the same thing. I mean, it's 50 Shades of Grey, you know, in terms of the characters, like the villains aren't born inherently evil. Mm. Something happened to them or they made a wrong choice and, you know, they often will have a shot at redemption. And the same thing that I think makes your heroes and your protagonists believable is that they have flaws, right? And they don't always make the right decision and they have to learn from their mistakes. And people, I think, that are readers you know, can identify with that. I think that really helps them get over that, you know, suspension of disbelief. Like, these characters are real. It isn't like, you know, insta love if they're falling in love when they see each other, or you know, that this person was born, you know, right out of, you know, the nine hells or whatever. It was, it's more like this character was created. And I get asked a lot at shows, you know, about origin stories. So I'm doing some of that too, or like as my series finishes, I'm doing three origin stories, some of the more popular characters. And it sounds like you guys, you know, can do some of that stuff too. So I guess that begs my next question. I mean, and Tyrone, I'll start with you. I know that you guys are, you know, you've got this anthology going on. Do you have a favorite story that's part of it right now? Do you have one that sticks out to you?
Yeah, I'll try not to cop out because I am partial to the story he mentioned, Impact, which is the first one. It deals a lot with the perception of the people when we first meet them and how that might change. And it's followed up with a story that immediately deals with life affirmation during times of grief. But to be honest, it's actually the fourth one. It's our latest one. It's called One Time is Too Many, or One is Too Many. And the thing that I love about it is there's some romance to it. A lot of what I write deals with some pretty heavy topics, and there's something about love that reminds me a little bit, this is going to sound odd, but the process of death, right? That's a part of life. And when you're falling in love, every moment feels precious or sacred, and we worry about it not lasting, or worse, it not mattering to anyone else once it's gone. So that story is about that worry, that being forgotten, or these moments wasting away once they're gone. And it just sticks with me. I actually reread it recently. I know so often writers, we get sick of reading our own stuff, and that can be true, but I reread it recently and it just, I got the same feeling I did when I was falling in love with the characters themselves.
Well, you know, before I let you go, Spike, cause I'm going to ask you the same question. I have to say, first of all, I love the covers of the books, you know, and I think there's some symbolism in the time piece that you have on there, the sands in the hourglass kind of stuff. And the fact that you mentioned that, if I'm correct, I'm seeing the symbolism, as it runs through there. I'm not beating, the wrong bush here, right?
You nailed it on the head. It was actually, we recently did two comic book conventions, and I believe it was the second one. I believe we were in Boston. Someone noticed that exact thing. And I will say, before Spike goes, that's been another wonderful aspect of sharing this with the world, is seeing people pick up on things that when you created it, almost sometimes feels like it's something for Spike and I. Like, we don't know, are people going to pick up on that? So I love hearing that. I thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. Spike, I know you're the illustrator here. I mean, did you do, I mean, obviously you saw the purpose in that too. And I look, you can get back to the first question, which is what's your favorite story in the anthology. But from a creator's perspective, the artist's perspective sitting on the other side, when I saw those covers, they pop, right? Like nice. If they were on a bookshelf in a Barnes and Noble, I would walk over and pick that up because I couldn't not look at that and say, that's pretty cool. Those would look good on my bookshelf at home. Was that what you had in mind when you were doing it, or, you know, where did that come from?
It's been a while since I came up with the first one. I just like the idea, you know, of having this illustration progressing across the series, and especially with what we'll be doing in the second half. You know, the hourglass will be flipping. So everything that's been draining over the course of the first four issues, you know, then will be going back in reverse, which will be reflective of the themes that are going to be playing over the course of the second half of the series. So it was something that I felt would visually communicate the themes in the story itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done, man. I agree. So, all right, let's rewind. Speaking of flipping the hourglass, about 28 minutes ago, I asked the question, what was your favorite story in the anthology? So, Spike, here's your chance. You get to come back on stage and rewind the clock a bit and answer that question for me.
So, for me, I think it's issue 3, Death's Red Smile. When Tyrone first pitched Borrowed Time to me, I was intrigued with the story from the jump. But when he told me about that issue particularly, that was when I really knew that I needed to draw this comic. When he was describing the concept of these old friends around this campfire sharing ghost stories, and, you know, one of them being met with pretty obvious disbelief at his, you know, quote-unquote true story of being haunted by this, you know, ancient entity, and then this thing materializes from thin air, you know, to claim one of them, that just got the gears in my head turning immediately. I always loved ghost stories and creature features growing up, so that appealed to my sensibilities right away. And I feel like I was pretty successful in designing something fairly terrifying, appropriately for that story.
Yeah, I have first of all, Death's Red Eyes, great title. Great title. It's like, oh, I got to read that. I don't even care what it's about. I'm going to read that, right? But then secondly, I like the progression, getting back to your original assertion, the progression of the hourglasses. I'm in the process right now of starting a new trilogy, and there's a girl that's born half elven and half Medusa. And on the first cover, it's her more elven. On the second cover, it's her turning more Medusa-like. And on the third cover, it's her like full on Medusa, right? And it's like, it's this super cool concept, and it's the progression of those covers that I think get you excited about reading the entirety of the series. So I really well done, guys. My hat's off to you on that one. But I have to ask this question because I think it's an obvious one. I mean, when you're working by yourself, you're 100% right all the time, right? You know, when you work together, oftentimes there's the art of a compromise that has to come in because, you know, I might like something that my business partner may not like, and there's a convincing of it, or you have to walk them through something. How has that worked for you guys? What's the creative process been like? What has the business process been like? Tell others, because look, we have a lot of not just readers artists that listen to the show, but we also have folks that are here that are authors, you know, and so give them a tip for working together as a creative team. And I think Spike, you went last time, so you'll go first this time.
I think it's important to listen to each other, you know, take from your own experiences. You know, you're coming from very different places, but I think if you're also, going to be successful in developing a story, you need to find those places of commonality as well. I think for Tyrone and I, one place that we definitely hit it off in common was our love for horror. I feel like there's a certain process to just how we work that kind of naturally gels. It helps that we meet very frequently. I think when it comes to developing the issues, at the start, we'll sit down and read through an entire script for the course of several hours, and just break it all down, you know, page by page, panel by panel, and really discuss, you know, what it is that we're trying to get across over the course of that entire story. But even on that page, you know, what is it that you're trying to express from there into the next page? And, you know, can we condense certain actions? Do we expand it? And I think having that kind of communication and back and forth is just important. I don't know if that made any sense.
Tyrone, is he right here? I mean, is your stuff, you know, because you say you get together once a week. Is that, does it happen to be at a bar, and does it involve alcohol to get you through, or is it as credible as he makes it sound?
Well, honestly, he kind of once again nailed it, because it comes with trust, right? Whenever we engage in art as creators, there is a certain sensitivity that can occur. And one of the greatest examples is actually his favorite issue. That was originally, when the scripts were written out, going to be the first issue. And I'm so thankful that we kind of repositioned it, because by the time we got to that, the trust had built. And Spike actually had a tremendous impact on almost every level of the story itself in that one. The way that I had originally envisioned the entity and the way that I described it in the script is completely different from what you see on the page, and wasn't as good. Like, when you read it now, even I look at it and I'm like, oh, I couldn't even imagine had we just gone with my original concept. But I trusted him, even the style of that comic. He was like, I want to try something. Each issue has a different style. And he was like, I want to do something crazy with this one. And I honestly didn't see it working until the day I saw the finished project. And then I was like, that's why he's the artist. That's why he's someone I trust.
Yeah. So this is going to come out of left field, guys, but since you mentioned, you know, like how you guys kind of do this separately and then come together and do it. Spike, who was your favorite character to draw? And Tyrone, who was your favorite character to write?
Wow.
Spike, and, Tyrone, you get
to, okay. All right. I know I was trying to buy time, but I'll do it. honestly, you know, there are characters that I model a little bit of after who I would envision my best self in a moment of crisis to be. But there was one that I loved, and it's in the first issue. Her name's Pamela. And I love her because it's my goal in writing is to have that inevitable surprise, right? It feels inevitable, but it surprises you. And her character surprised me as I wrote her. There's so much humanity in her that at face value, when you first see her, literally she's wearing clown makeup. The intention is to make you feel like she's a shallow concept, right? In general, as a person, and to find out that she's the heart of the story, that she has depth, was beautiful to write. It actually had an impact on me and how I go about my day to day and the individuals I meet.
Spike, how about you? Who's your favorite to draw?
Oh, man. Well, as far as the human ones, at least, I'm going to have to probably go with Cassie, I think, in issue two. I really like her steely resolve. I just had a lot of fun conveying that through her general expressions. She's a... I tried to draw her with you know, certain sharp edges to her facial features to convey her personality. I really enjoyed just working with her in that issue.
That's cool. That's real cool. Let me ask you this again, because there's a very specific character I want to talk about for a second. I mean, your main character, or maybe one of your main characters, I should say, is a guy named Marcus, who's a drug user. And I don't know to whom to address this. I'm just going to address it to both of you, and you guys can answer it separately if you like. Was there a thought behind that background for the character? Was there a reason? That's a hard subject. It's a serious subject. You know, folks that are reading comics, you know, are various ages. Obviously, graphic novels are lean a little older and things like that too. Did you guys have trouble deciding whether or not to have that as part of the story, or how did that concept of making that a main character and a flaw really, you know, come to life and something you guys were comfortable in doing?
If you don't mind, Spike. So for me, there are several tough topics that we broach in this series, especially in that first issue. There is a lot of drug addiction in my personal family. It inspired my sister actually to help open and run a drug rehab clinic. And some of the issues like self-harm and things that we address, we try to be conscious of what we're discussing to still make them human, to still show the, like you said, there's some negative aspects to everything that we discuss. And we just want to be sensitive to it, but also not shy away from it. Because honestly, drug addiction is a real thing that that almost everyone I've ever met in my life has someone close to them that's dealt with. And it actually was for a purpose. When you think of drug abuse and drug addiction, life and death, it is life and death. So when you're dealing with a comic that focuses on those topics, I just felt it would almost be negligent not to include something like that.
It also sounds like it's something that's near and dear, and those, and you, we as authors, we write what we know. Mm-hmm. And you're right. My family was touched with it. I can't name a single person who hasn't had something in the family or friend circle that's not touched with drugs or alcohol in some capacity. So, and the way you've treated it sounds to me like you guys have really put some thought behind addressing it forwardly, but also addressing it in a way that you're doing it justice. And you're also, you know, kind of protecting the character, teaching a lesson in it too. So that's cool. So I'm going to go from a super serious question to one that's not serious at all. And Spike, since Tyrone jumped on that one, I'm going to come back to you for this one. And I'm only going to ask it because I found it cool. So you're working with a colorist and a letterer. And yeah, for someone like me who didn't know that those jobs existed, and for those that are listening, can you, so in my head, I always thought that a graphic artist was doing all that on their own. It sounds to me like there are specialists that will do the coloring, and then there are specialists that do the lettering for the bubbles and all of that kind of stuff. Is that true? Is that what they do for you? Can you explain how you mesh them into what you guys are doing and what their roles are?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are people who do everything on a book. I've done everything, you know, visually on the book myself before, and it's absolutely maddening. It takes up all your time, and you know, I definitely feel like there are people who are better suited to certain jobs than I am on, you know, a particular story. And yeah, I was very fortunate. We, you know, were able to find Desai to color for us, and basically every single one of the anthology stories themselves, he colors those. You know, I'll basically give him a kind of creative brief, you know, as far as what I'm thinking the sort of tone and look should be to correspond with the art style that I've chosen for that certain story. And then he runs with it. And I think he does an amazing job. I'll do the coloring then, say, on the Borrowed Time proper framing story so that it looks different compared to his. But, you know, it's a little more manageable because it's only generally about 7-8 pages in an issue as opposed to doing, you know, 40, 50 by myself. And then, yeah, same with lettering. I had done the lettering in the first 3 issues by myself. But then, you know, as we moved on to the 4th, it was helpful to then get Reed in. You know, he's an exceptional letterer. I think that he really adds something to the comic that, you know, while I appreciated my lettering job, I think that it's certainly enhanced with his. And again, it helps to save time and allows me to focus more on actually drawing as opposed to spending time on these other jobs.
You got it's amazing the nuance that goes into these things, like stuff that I wasn't even unaware of that's just super cool. And I know that our listeners will appreciate that. So, gents, we're running a little behind. I mean, we've gone over where I thought we were going to be. So we're going to have to skip our traditional lightning round here. But before I let you go, I have to ask one question, because I know those that are listening are going to ask me. So I might as well get it out of the way. Obviously, you guys are planning more of these, right? I mean, how many issues are you planning? When can we expect the next?
So, as he alluded to earlier, it is 8 issues total. We finished the first 4. That's the first half, the Hourglass Tips. And then each issue in the back half is actually mirroring the corresponding issue. So 4 and 5, 3 and 6, 7, 2, exactly, 1 and 8. So we'll finish that 8. That does complete the first series. We do have plans, obviously, for what to do next. But that would be the story proper for Marcus's story. And where you can find it, we're going to start that in January. We are working right now on a trade paperback of those first 4 issues. But in January, we're actually starting the second half. We're even looking to bring on an inker to kind of help speed up production and also, more creativity, another person to help.
Cool. Well, gents, before I let you go, take a little second for each of you to tell everybody where they can find you, how they can follow you on social media, and where they can buy your stuff. And Spike, I'll start with you.
So, I'm on Instagram and X. You can find me at Spike Olehia. I'm also on Facebook under Spike O Illustration. And we can be found Borrowed Time. It's Borrowed Time 462 on X and Facebook, and then I believe we're Borrowed Time Comic on Instagram.
Yeah, when you look that up on Instagram, though, it's Borrowed _time_comic.
Thank you. Yeah, we should probably
that's a point of
standardize that. Yeah, maybe once we print the trade paperback and we do the second print run, we can update that on the interiors. But and the book's available digitally right now at borrowedtimecomics.com. And we're also on Comixology and Kindle Direct. You can get us digitally. We're in the process of trying to get a print-on-demand shop going for our print run as well. But in the meantime, if you're interested in getting them in print, you can contact us via social media or through our website, and we'll work out doing direct shipping.
Cool. How about you, Tyrone? Where can everybody find you and follow you?
Actually, the best place is through the Borrowed Time socials. That's actually the easiest way to get a hold of me. So again, that's Borrowed Time 462 on both Facebook and X, and then that Borrowed _time_comic. Otherwise, all those are listed at borrowedtimecomics.com, so you can just see it there.
Well, cool, gents. Well, thank you very much for being on the show tonight. I know our listeners are going to enjoy this. They're used to me having authors and poets on here, and you guys are a nice, different mix. So I'm glad you're able to come on. And for those of you listening, don't forget to check out alteredrealitymag.com, our sponsor. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be on the air, so we appreciate that. And go check out these guys, follow them, get their stuff, check them out. I met them last early summer, I'll put it, at the Pittsburgh Comic Con. Was attracted to their table. Their stuff is great. Go check it out. And gents, again, thanks for coming on the show. And to all of our followers out there, thanks again for lending us your ear this evening. And until next time, I am JV Hilliard, and may your gods go with you. Thanks again, gents.